Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 399 with my new pal, podcaster, comedian, writer, charming, recent Los Angelina, Hallie Kiefer. We had a great conversation. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. And I also just want to acknowledge that this is the 399th episode. Now, if you look at the episode numbers, like on Apple iTunes, which, by the way, I never say this. anyone who knows my podcast well knows I fully never say please review on iTunes. Sometimes I go through these little pockets where I ask people to, but I'm awful at it. You know what? I'm going for it. Please, 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 if you haven't already, give this podcast a positive review. Because I never push for it, I don't have as many as you would imagine after doing a podcast for almost 9 years. So if you have a moment in your day, please do so. I will appreciate you and love you always. At any rate, so because I've re-released certain episodes and stuff like that, this upcoming 400th episode is really sort of the 400th original episode, if that makes sense. So I'm excited about that, and I want to acknowledge it and celebrate it. So more on that when the episode drops. And in the meantime, I really hope everyone is staying safe, doing well, and this is Thanksgiving drop. It's coming out this Thursday, or I guess midnight on Wednesday. So please take care of yourselves. Have a wonderful day if you are celebrating in some way. If you're not, boy, I sure get it. Most important thing is I appreciate you, and I hope you are kind to yourself. And I will talk to you soon. Are you in LA or are you in New York?
Yes, I'm in LA. I'm from Koreatown. I actually moved in. So I met my boyfriend. He was working actually in Connecticut, and I was living in Queens. Not this year, but last year. And so we were dating long distance, and then I just made the decision to move to LA for him. And then we moved in together March 1st of this year. And so, you know, it's just the whole experience has been in quarantine. So it's been a wild ride. And,
no
and pretty
kidding.
Much all my LA experience. Yeah.
Have you talked about that a lot out in the open? Like, have you been talking about it on your podcast or?
I mean, just like just my gratefulness that it seems to have been working out. You know what I mean? Because there was definitely like that moment of like, boy, all right, well, this is really a trial by fire.
Yeah.
If things don't pan out, we're just going to be, I can't move anywhere right now. You know,
right.
Like, we just have to, whatever our problems are, we're going to have to work through them.
Yeah. I think that's great. I mean, you know, because I'm sure you've established this, but basically the fact that you've lived together since March, now you've been together like 5 human years.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like dog years. This is quarantine's dog years for relationships. Absolutely.
I mean, I sort of had something similar in terms of like the person that I've now been with for approaching 6 years. You know, it definitely was a situation where when we got together, life was a bit chaotic, and then just a series of shitty things happened in life, you know, just like family stuff and various things that had nothing to do with a relationship that were out of everyone's control. And it was a little bit of a trial by fire. And I got to tell you, there is definitely something to be said for having that stuff happen and sort of now knowing, like, I'm not like nothing. But like when this happened, I couldn't have been less worried about our relationship. I mean, I was worried about lots of other things. But when COVID happened and I knew we were going to lock down together, I was like, oh, we got this. This
right,
is not going to be, this is tiny compared to stuff we've weathered, you know?
Yeah, that's a really great point.
Yeah.
I feel like it's funny because like it does make me much more grateful. Not that I wasn't grateful, but I think, you know what I mean? I'm a very like anxious sort of you know, nitpicky person about my own life, so I feel like quarantine sort of erases that like tendency I have to be like, oh, well, like, are we gonna fight or whatever? I'm just like, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever's wrong, we'll just talk about it. And it'll be over with. You know,
yeah,
like, there's
absolutely
no point in drawing anything out. because it's just going to be us in these four walls, you know, for the foreseeable future.
That's
and
right.
also, it's funny because so I was in New York, and I mean, these are a lot of hypotheticals. But yes, hypothetically, if we, my boyfriend's name is Dave, if we were not together, I would still be living in New York. And during the early months of the quarantine, literally every time I talk to my parents, they're like, thank God for Dave. For getting you out of there. Obviously, now everywhere is like this because of our horrible mismanagement at a governmental level. But it's just so funny. They're like, they just love Dave so much already, you know, because he's great. But then they were also like, if you hadn't met Dave, my God, you know, like, where would you be? And they're right. I would just be alone with two Craigslist roommates in Queens, losing my mind, I'm sure.
The way that you're describing it does sound slightly 1950s, though, and I know that's not what
it's
you mean.
Very
but the
funny.
Idea of, of them being like, that nice man came and rescued you.
Like,
you
you
were a wretch. Yeah.
We thought you were a wash. I mean, after a certain point, we're like, well, she tried. She couldn't get it done.
That's right. Now, have you had friends that you left behind that did end up getting sick, or has everybody kind of been lucky?
I think I know like two couples who have had it, who had it early, and they were fine. I don't know anyone, at least, I mean, God knows how long it's still going to go on, but I fortunately know people who had it, and it was sort of that weeks-long lingering terrible flu experience, but you know, didn't have to be hospitalized, that kind of thing. What about you? Do you have people close to you?
I haven't had anybody. The first kind of big boom of it, I didn't have anybody close to me. I had a couple of people I found out that, you know, were fans that became friends and stuff like that, that I found out after the fact that they had been sick. And I just got an email this morning from a listener who, you know, I've been doing my podcast almost 9 years, and he was one of the very first people to like write me and say, I'm so glad you're doing a podcast. So I feel like he's been in my life he has been in my life in some way or other for a really long time. And he and his wife were diagnosed with it last week. And, you know, they have fairly tolerable cases, and but you know, I was just reading this email before you and I started talking, and he was saying that, you know, making dinner like last night felt like they were trying to run a marathon, you know, so there was like, they're on the mend, but and he was like, I think I kind of smelled the coffee this morning, which was very exciting.
Oh, that's good.
So but man, oh man, here we keep going. We keep going.
Yeah, I don't know about you. I only went to go get tested once. My boyfriend woke up and he had sort of like symptoms, so we thought, you know, why not just go get tested? And we didn't have it. And I think looking back, it's just funny. You know, living in LA, it's like, oh, it was right during all of the terrible forest fires. So I think
Oh, 100%
from the horrible air quality,
100%.
And I love Los Angeles. I've been really enjoying my time in California. But let me tell you, there's a certain day I woke up and the sunlight was orange because of the smoke.
It's so apocalyptic.
Oh boy. And I feel, again, very fortunate. Was like that was, you know, I had symptoms. I have asthma, so I was kind of worried, but it was not terrible. Probably in part because we were inside and I wore a mask outside. But you know, it was just sort of like, boy, on top of everything else. He's like, are these allergies? Is this a regular flu season, or, you know, is it COVID?
Yeah. Anything respiratory is like, there are so many people that have some version of something that you really don't want the symptom to be respiratory. Because like, if you're a person who has asthma, 100%. If you're a person who has anxiety or panic attacks, if you're a person with allergies, if you're a person like, there's so many things you can have that you can easily interpret as this. You know, if you're so inclined. And definitely during the fires, there was like, every day was like, is this, but yes, I am having trouble breathing and my chest feels very tight and I can't stop coughing. But luckily, it's another poisonous reason. Like, oh,
exactly.
Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boysenberry. Well, I'm glad that you moving here in March has not like tainted your feel. I mean, the fact that you're still, you know, having a positive experience of a kind in LA makes me really happy to hear. And I say that as a person who is, you know, totally snobby about hating Los Angeles when I lived in San Francisco. And so many of my East Coast friends, you know, they kind of take a while to admit that there's some kind of great stuff here. So it's always nice hearing you know, from an early adopter.
Yeah, you know, I think like the first 2 months I was here, I definitely was like, oh boy. But I think a lot of that was just realizing, at least for me, like the sheer size of LA. And, you know, I feel like living in New York for as long as I did, it's like, I had like an idea of like where everything was.
Yeah,
you know,
like, absolutely. Same for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Not like I wasn't like going to the Bronx every day, but if I wanted to, I knew how to go there. I knew where it was. And LA is sort of like, oh, there are just certain neighborhoods where I've never heard of them. I don't know where anything is geographically. I kept like looking at a map. So I feel like those first 2 months were mostly being like, I just have to reorient like my brain.
Sure.
But after that, I'm like, hey, it's a city. You know, and then we're inside, so I had to get used to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say, and two, you're 100% right. And by the way, you know, I've been here for like 14 years now,
okay. And
which is crazy. But one of the things that, like, I think that the vastness of it on a bad day is disturbing, but on a good day, there is truly a sense of, like, you know, like, Brandon and I went to Santa Monica to Palisades Park, which was kind of, we don't drive very much anyway, which is kind of amazing for LA, even just in our lives, because he's, you know, he's an editor and a journalist. And so a lot of the stuff he does, he would do from home anyway. And then for me, you know, if I'm not shooting something, like everything I do is pretty much something I can do from home or nearby anyway. And so when we locked down, it never occurred to, like, some people, and you can tell me if you and Dave did this, but some people were really, I don't want to say good or bad, but they would be like, oh yeah, we drove out to Tujunga just for a change, or like we drove up Angeles Crest just for something different. Like they think to spend an hour just locally to go somewhere different. And we just weren't driving at all. We just simply weren't driving. And so everything we did was like in walking distance.
Interesting.
Which we were walkers. So for us, that could still mean we walked, you know, like 5 miles to go to a park that blah, blah, blah. But we had not been out to Santa Monica in, I cannot even tell you how long. And because LA is so vast and because there are so many different little communities, it really felt like we were on vacation. You know, it was a feeling
right.
Like, oh, yeah. I haven't, when was the last time I looked at the ocean? Like, what? But yeah, that's true. You know, I can see it. I could see it in the distance from where I live, but that's a very long way away. So, you know, as kind of overwhelming as it can be, like, rest assured, there's also like a million different new strange and fun adventures that you can have for many, many, many years to come, because there's just stuff happening that's neat everywhere. And it's very diverse and different, the kind of neatness that you can find, you know?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I don't know this is part of my boyfriend's personality, but it also, I think he's like wanting me to like L.A., so we definitely, he'll be like, oh, let's go here. Like, let's go get food here or whatever. So I feel like he's been very good about being like, well, let's try something different. And also, we live in Koreatown. I'm, you know, having lived in New York, I would prefer to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, and things are open, you know, but it's not like you could, like, hang out, you know, like, and I
right,
feel like
right.
One thing we were looking at to move to this area is that it's walkable. You know, we can walk anywhere. There's like a Target here, which I go to constantly, but it's sort of like, oh, right. The walkability of this becomes less important when there's simply nowhere to go. So I feel like we've been, you know, really trying to, like, you know, branch out. And I mean, it's mostly food related. All yesterday, I was like, oh, we saw this thing on Instagram. We should drive there and get food. And, but I will say, we went to the beach. My boyfriend has a son who's 3, and we took him to Santa Monica to the beach. And
oh,
I hadn't been to the beach here. And it was so fun. And like, there was like, we went very early, so everyone there was someone with a toddler. And so
it was
gorgeous. It was like very socially distanced and but everyone had masks on. It was wonderful. But the same thing, like, I'm not someone who was like, oh yeah, we could just go to the beach. Like, it doesn't occur to me.
Right.
So when we did it, I was like, what a world, what a city.
I know.
Like, just so impressed.
No, and it was really funny. That's great.
His son was, like, obviously very intimidated by the ocean because, like, he just hasn't seen it, you know? And he kept saying, I love the ocean. and like in this terrified way. And they're like, and we're like, oh, do you want to go close to it? He's like, mm-mm, no, I'm good.
Oh, that's
he's
so
like,
cute.
I want to sit here and look at it and be like, I like this. This is good. Uh-huh. So it was very sweet.
Now, did Dave move the same time as you, or had he already moved and kind of found the place and then you came out, or did you guys go through that adventure together as well?
Yeah, so when he was living with roommates when I moved out here. So we ended up, we were just talking, like, I could have stayed with his roommates, but again, this is right before the pandemic.
Right.
And then a friend of a friend was going to New York to work on a Netflix show. So she was subletting her apartment. So we ended up moving in there with the idea of, like, oh, she was going to come back in the September of this year.
Right.
And so we were going to just sublet. Of course, this all happened. You know, her Netflix show got pushed back permanently. I still don't know if they're going to be able to shoot it or how that's going to work out.
Yeah.
So then she's coming back. So then we ended up getting the place we're in now in August. So yes, we did have to go through the apartment search process during quarantine. And which is horrible always, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was just like definitely a weird, like, psychological, like, okay, not only are we looking for an apartment, but an apartment that hypothetically we're going to be inside of for a year, you know?
Right.
I mean, and again, we found a place in Koreatown. Honestly, we picked this place, which we've enjoyed it, because it came with a free parking space. And we're like,
that's very enjoyable.
we're not going to be driving as much, you know? So,
yeah.
So, yeah, but I really feel very fortunate that it, you know, so far so good. Cannot complain, you know. Could be worse is what I tell myself every day.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Dead Pilot Society brings you exclusive readings of comedy pilots that were never made, featuring actors like Patton Oswalt.
So the vampire from the future sleeps in the dude's studio during the day, and they hunt monsters at night. It's Blade meets the Odd Couple.
Adam Scott and Jane Levy.
Come on, Corey. She's too serious, too businessy. She doesn't know the hokey pokey.
Well, she'll learn what it's all about.
Busy Phillips and Dave Koechner.
Baby, this is family.
My Uncle Tell, who showed his wiener to Cinderella at Disneyland, is family. Do you want him staying with us?
He did stay with us for 3 months.
And he was a delight.
A new pilot every month, only on Dead Pilot Society for Maximum Fun.
And now, are you from Queens or from the New York area, or are you from elsewhere?
So I'm from outside Cleveland, so Northeast Ohio.
I gotta be honest with you. I thought I detected perhaps an Ohio accent, because
yes.
I feel like I have a large number of friends from Ohio somehow, but I was not going to
You hit the nail on the head. Well, it's funny because, like, I have not lived there since I was 18, and yes, and it really comes out when I drink. Normally, I don't sound quite as Midwestern, but then if I have a glass of wine, forget about it. But so I grew up there, and my parents are still in Cleveland. And then my youngest brother, he and his fiance are in Columbus. And I love Ohio. I can't imagine ever moving back there, but I enjoyed being raised there, and I have a lot of love for the state. Are you from California? Or
no, I'm from Arizona, and I feel the same way.
Yes.
Like, I'm I'd be fiercely proud of kind of, you know, how they showed up for this last election. And, you know, my parents still live there, and I love it. And I, like you, I can't imagine living there again, but I feel very tender feelings about it for sure.
Ohio is all over the place. In terms of voting. I mean, they voted for Obama, but here we are.
Right.
But I was just remembering that I was listening to your episode with Naomi Ekperigin, who I know from New York.
Nice.
And you talking about Tucson, the origin of the name Tucson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, embarrassing that I realize there are so many things that I don't. It's also like having a conversation about, I mean, maybe this is it like this in Ohio, too, where there are things that other people from out of town would go to that are attractions that you realize you've just never, like, I've spent precious little time at the Grand Canyon, considering
that
I lived like 30 minutes south of there when I was in college for 2.5 years, you know, but like those are the other things like that in Ohio where you're like, oh man, I feel kind of embarrassed that I can't be the person who knows about this like one national natural wonder kind of thing?
No, I feel like because Ohio, it's very, maybe Arizona's the same way, but it's like, it's very much like, here are all of our things and we're all going to do them. You know, like here are 10 things that everyone does. I will say, having been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I never need to go back. I completely understand it. And then it's like, if someone was a tourist, I would say, yeah, check it out. But right. I certainly have no information about it. I don't know what's there and I never will.
And, right. I never will. What a commitment. I love it.
Last time I guess it was last June, my aunt and cousin and his kids came to visit and I was in town and we went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and we walked inside and we're like, we don't really want to go here. And we just went to the gift shop. And I'm like, that's the kind of experience I like to have. Just go to a gift shop and go home.
I feel I've totally done that too, which I hadn't really thought about until you just said that. But now I think about it, I'm like, I feel like that's definitely stuff I've done, particularly when I was younger. And I think there was some sort of phase where I wanted to be more into museums than I was. Mm-hmm. And so it's this like weird in between. Like now I feel like, yeah, you know, I'll either not go to a museum because I know I'm not interested, or I will go because the enthusiasm is real. But there's some period, like maybe in my late teens, early 20s, where there's a little more of the kind of trying on things and feeling like I should want to go to this museum, but also being like persnickety and like an only child enough, which I've only recently like decided that is not my fault and is okay, to not have had to compromise certain things. I mean, it's not like I was spoiled in any kind of financial sense, but like the reality is if it's just you and your dad, the chances that you're going to not do the thing that you're interested in are smaller than if you have four siblings. Like, so, you know, it's like sort of you get to the place and you're like, huh, God, I just don't, I'm like projecting out into the next hour and a half and I just don't, but then I'm like, but I'm happy to go into the gift shop. And you sort of feel like you've gotten the snapshot via like what stuffed animals are for sale or like, what are the books they carry here? Like,
exactly.
I kind of feel like I went to the museum.
Right. I get the idea. Yeah. My, unfortunately Dave will miss this year. Is that he was going to come to Thanksgiving every day after the day after Thanksgiving. My family in Cleveland, we do Culture Day, which is, we have to do something cultural. So usually we'll go to a museum. And one time though, we went to, and I don't want to, this is a great place for people who are into this, but we went to like a independent, like paper making mill, where it's like a bunch of hippies making paper. And so like, which is cool. That's extremely cool. And like, but then like the actual paper making process is like, here's a bucket of glue that we put in this thing and we press it. And so, and also it was freezing cold, I think because they have to keep it cold to make paper. And it was sort of like, well, you know, I guess on paper, this was fun. But in reality, it's like, oh, this is a factory where hippies make paper, which is great. And I thought it was very cool and I'm glad we saw it. But then we got to the gift shop, we got to actually see the paper and buy it. I was like, well, this part I like.
Yes,
other part
indeed.
Where it's just like pulp or mush in a bucket. Well, that's not for me. But the end product was very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real, like, you almost feel like, wait, maybe you should start with a gift shop so that you have an appreciation for the finished product, so that the gloop has more meaning once you have a reference point. That's really funny. What was your high school like when you were in Cleveland? I won't say Cleveland proper necessarily, because I know there's lots of pockets and pieces.
Yeah, so I was in Geauga County, which is like further northeast. So it was more rural where I was. Like we were past the suburbs. It was a public school. I don't know. I feel like I did have like that very typical American, like everyone went to the football game, you know, like.
Yeah.
I was not a cheerleader. I was not on the dance corps. I was in the flag corps, which I didn't realize, but because apparently there's like a Family Guy segment about it. It is rightfully known as the domain of freaks and losers, which it was in my school. But it was like losers who like still had a lot of school spirit. So
had to do... It's an important distinction.
Yeah, and so I was on that, and I feel like everything I did in high school was just entirely because I just wanted to hang out with my friends. Yeah. And fortunately, my friends were like all very lovely people with a lot of diverse interests. So I did like the musical, I did drama club, I did academic decathlon, entirely because I just wanted to hang out with people. And that's true of my life now, I think, is the truth. Like, honestly, but I wasn't someone who was like, oh, I really want to go do this. I'm like, well, I don't have anything else to do. I'll just do whatever my friends are doing.
Right. I get that.
So
here's something that I have to admit, which is that I was a smart kid, but I was very unmotivated by most things that were school related. And I realized that while I have grown up, I've spent my entire life knowing that an academic decathlon exists. I realize in this moment, I have absolutely no idea what that means. Like, are you doing 10 different subjects of things? Like, what do you
exactly
do?
So, Janet, this all ties in perfectly. This is all kind of full circle. Because, yeah, so basically, every year, at least is my experience of it, every year there's, like, a theme to everything. So, like, the year I did it, there'd be a music category. And it was all Americana and country music. So it was sort of like you had to study and listen and know things or whatever. And then sort of debate would be another category. And so everyone had to prepare like a persuasive argument. And I think those are the only two I remember doing because I'm not good at anything else. So so it was like me and a couple of my good friends. My friend Jess did it. Hi, Jess. I'll make him listen to this. And so and Mrs. Hauser was our advisor.
Let me clarify one thing before we continue, because clearly this has become like my life's work is finding out about this academic decathlon. What would you like? Is it a semester or is it like an after school thing?
It's an after school thing.
Okay.
So
gotcha,
I Googled it. A 10 event scholastic competition for teams of high school students. So because we were in the small school category, we were not as good as the larger schools, but the larger schools had more people to draw from and smarter probably. So the year I did it was my senior year, and we got to go to nationals, which was in Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
So, which was great because I had never been to the American Southwest. We went to the Dale Chihuly exhibit.
Oh, sure.
We saw the Phoenix Gay Pride Parade happened to be the time we were there. I had the time of my life.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was really great. And then I remember going into it. So it's like days of competitions, like different competitions. And then I remember going in and I was doing like the persuasive speech, like the debate. And I go in and I just blew it. And I just forgot everything I was saying. And so then I'm like in a room with like in front of judges, just forgetting everything and humiliating myself. But then it was over and that was fine. And then we just got to like hang out with, you know, the other kids who went with us. Oh, and then we went to go see the Grand Canyon. So honestly,
God, that really did come full circle.
Yeah. So I couldn't tell you anything about how anyone did, if anyone won anything, but I had a great time and I saw the wonders of Arizona.
And you got to be with your buddies, which as a people person, sounds like it was a really good, a way of like having a thing to be with people that you like doing. That's like I sort of like I have a sense of like, oh, maybe I would have liked something like that.
Yeah, I think it was like I was always like a B student, and it was just largely like, and I think a lot of high schoolers, I think it's like I remember at the time being like, we have to pick something to do with your life, and I'm like, man, I don't even want to be in this class. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do that, you know? Like, I don't even want to be having this conversation with you. I don't know how I'm going to find that next thing. But, it really led me, I feel like it really helped me to be like, I don't particularly want to do anything, but I'm friends with people who do, so I'll just do their thing. Uh-huh. It was great.
Did you, so when you did go, did you go to college?
Yes. Yeah. I went to Notre Dame, which is in Indiana. So
I mean, yeah, that's not a school. That doesn't seem like a just messing around kind of a college. Like, did you, by the time you were applying to colleges and stuff, did you have sort of a thing drawing you that way?
You know, I'll be honest. No, I made my parents apply. I want to say I applied to 11 colleges or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I had no idea where I wanted to go. I had no idea, like, You know, I went to visit. I remember going to see Boston College. I went to go see Tulane. Those were nice because I went with my dad as sort of like a college tour. And so that was fun. I really had no idea. It wasn't, and I wish, always wish I was that person when I was younger. Like, oh, I want to, you know, move to New York and do whatever. I really had no idea. So I ended up going to Notre Dame because my dad went there. And it was, you know, familiar to me. I had been there a couple times as a kid. And but I don't know. I was never that person where it's like, oh, here's my dream school. Like, this is my fantasy. You know?
Yeah. When did you start sort of angling towards kind of getting into comedy and writing? And I know you said you did the drama club and the musical and stuff. Was that stuff speaking to you in a way that was like, oh, this is really fun, but this is fun stuff. It's not career stuff.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe, I don't know how you felt about this, but yeah, I really enjoyed that stuff, but it was never like, oh, this is something. I had no idea that it could become a career or how people made that a career.
Yeah.
So actually when I graduated college, I enrolled to get my master's in information and library science at Pratt, which is in New York. And so I actually moved to New York to do that program. And that was because being a librarian is sort of like a family profession. Like, my aunt's a librarian, my cousin's a librarian. So it was kind of like, oh, I was aware of it. Yeah. And also I liked the idea of it. Like, oh, I like working with people and you know, I have to learn all these like information systems and like how to build a website. I'm like, those are all stuff that like independently I'm interested in, you know?
Sure.
And then I moved there and unfortunately I made the fatal mistake of taking an improv class at UCB. And I'm like, I want to do this. I want to be, follow my creative spirit. So I still get that. I do get my degree and I'm still paying off my student loan. So I technically do have my master's. I've just never really used it to date.
That's impressive. Library science. Yeah. I had a friend in high school who, a dear friend who I think when I was maybe a freshman or a sophomore, she was a senior and she was like just biding her time getting ready to graduate so that she could go study library science. And so cool. She was like very kind of goth / mod and just very chill. And I remember she loved Pittsburgh. I can't remember why, but she couldn't wait to move to Pittsburgh and become a librarian. And she just was it was like the level of ambition and confidence that you sort of imagine in a cliche world the future doctor or lawyer has about moving to, you know, going to Harvard and then moving to New York or whatever. And there was something so charming still about thinking back to that, like her level of certainty and her enthusiasm and ambition about that, about becoming a librarian in Pittsburgh. Like,
absolutely.
And she did. And she was so there's something about that that I just absolutely, especially somebody who kind of looks like Susie Sue, like that, like there's something very appealing about, you know, just a goth teenager who can't wait to become a librarian in Pittsburgh. I mean, that's so specific. It's like Wes Anderson or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like I knew a lot of like pretty punk librarians. And I think, you know, it was interesting. It was like trying hard to be a part of something that you just don't really have a passion for, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's, which is like just soul crushing, but also like it is, like a lot of like librarian stuff when I was working on my master's was sort of like how to get people access to things, like, you know, sort of like breaking down these hurdles for people getting information.
Sure,
so it is
that's
very
huge.
Like, yeah, like this tech like egalitarian thing that like, but which is funny because like that was happening while those like Facebook and all these startups were happening, where it was like all about like, you know, sort of like all these owning information and like using it in this really nefarious way. So it's like, wow, those librarians are really on top of their game. Like they were kind of ahead of the curve. Like that all this stuff is going to be proprietary. So we have to try to make sure that people actually have access to good information.
Yeah.
So God bless all those librarians. If you're a librarian listening to this, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for your service. I'm saluting you, the librarian salute. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's like two hands. shading yourself like you're holding an open book over
love
your forehead
it.
For
I
shade
love it.
For sun, yeah, for sun protection. And so did you when you took the improv class, like did you stay friends with people that you'd known when you were in high school? Like did you have the conversation as your life was sort of evolving towards comedy where people would say like, you know what, I got to tell you, I'm not actually not that surprised.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like people were very, it was almost like, and I still feel this way about my career now, where people were like very enthusiastic and very supportive. But I'm also like, what I want from you is like, you tell me practically what you think I should be doing. You know, mm-hmm. So I think people were like, this is great, you should do this. I'm like, okay, but like, how do people make money? You know,
right,
like,
right.
And so I think, yeah, I think a lot of people were like, oh, this makes a lot of sense, which is funny. And I guess maybe to me, it's like, I just don't have that practical, like, as a teenager, I didn't understand, like, how to practically you do comedy or you become a writer,
sure.
You know? And then, like, once I started doing it, I'm like, but how do people do this? And I guess the reality is, like, a lot of this, like, you just have to do it. Like, you just have to
right.
be, meet those people and do those crummy jobs and, you know, sort of make it work as you can. But do you feel that, like, how, when you were a teenager compared to, like, where you are now, like, would you be surprised or were you sort of the same person then as you are now, would you say?
I mean, I think people who listen to the podcast know this, but I took a large break from anything kind of acting related when I moved to San Francisco. But and so maybe that's the impetus for me asking you is that, like, I might as well have a t-shirt that says this, but you know, there's a lot of like reconnecting with people that I haven't connected with in a really long time, or certainly there was when I moved to LA, and there was a sort of sense of like, oh yep, mm-hmm, we always knew or whatever, and I felt somehow like that discounted this giant departure that my life took, because I was, you know, kind of into doing plays and stuff, but again, it was like, you know, I had friends who were taking outside acting classes, and, you know, I had friends who were like on the, you know, smattering of TV shows that would come through mm-hmm. Tucson and stuff. And that I never thought that was me. I never felt, I don't know why. I don't know if it was intimidated by it or if I just felt like I didn't have a right to, I don't know. But yeah, same. I was very pragmatic about stuff. And I think I was also very like, yeah, I think I just thought my life would be kind of small and mm-hmm. not in a bad way. But, you know, I knew I wasn't going to live in Tucson, but I don't think I had, you know, ambitions that were based on anything that, you know, were like solid and describable. And I think when I moved to San Francisco, like falling in love with San Francisco and kind of always wanting to live there was about as far as any of that went is, you know, that mm-hmm. was my ambition was just get there. And right. and who cares like what you're doing, just be, that's my ambition, San Francisco, that's it, like it's just a big, just two words, one city, don't nothing planned or understood beyond that, which is like, I guess that's a very San Francisco thing to do, but yeah, so I totally relate. Were you a person who was like real into kind of pop culture stuff? Like, were you a big, like, you know, music fan or?
Yeah. I remember I was trying to think of the website was D-listed or something. There was sort of like a pop culture. Let me see if it still exists. But yes, I was very much, I mean, when I was young, it was the age of magazines. And I remember, like, compulsively, like, needing to read every magazine and, you know, being obsessed with Entertainment Weekly and everything. And then, you know, eventually everything went online and, yeah, D-listed is the name of the website.
Nice.
That was, like, a pop culture website. But I sort of remember the first one reading and being like, oh, my God, this is great. I was just thinking recently, so when I moved to New York and I was working towards my degree, I also ended up applying to like be a part-time blogger for this website owned by VH1 called The Fab Life. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I believe it doesn't exist. So like all of my work has been lost, which is fine. But it was interesting. It was like an era in which, one, it was like you could be mean on the internet. And I really wasn't. I mean, I could be wrong. If someone would have shown me, they'd be like, you said this horrible things about celebrities. But we passed through and are on the other side of it. The idea of like just being viciously mean to celebrities on the internet, and that's funny. And yeah. It's interesting how organically we went through that. But like, it was, I just remember like whenever like Lady Gaga first came out and just like talking about her weight, like all this stuff.
Hmm.
So I feel like that's when I first started writing online, was during that era. But that was like also very, it was like Gawker, you know, like Vice or
right.
whatever, kind of just
yeah.
being like nasty online. And then we passed through it. And obviously there's problems with like fan culture now, like online. Like the whole thing is like the internet was in many ways a mistake for people psychologically.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like so much of my early like working life was like, how do I write something about Lady Gaga's outfit? You know, like how, and because that's how I was getting, you know, so eventually I got an office assistant job. And so, okay, so I was working as an office assistant at Barnard College. Wonderful college. Go there if you're a young lady looking to go to college in Manhattan.
Nice.
But I was also blogging, and I was technically, if you will, blog, essentially doing the job, blogging job while I was at this other job.
Right.
And I remember my boss at my office assistant job calls me in, and she had printed out all of like my posts that I had written while I was working.
Uh-oh.
And all I could do was be like, well, you got me. You know, like, you're not wrong. I can't be mad. You know,
right. And did she know that because like she realized that you were always typing, but what could you possibly be typing because you didn't have that much typing to do? Or
yes. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Because I was like, I remember talking to a woman who I worked with after the fact, and I was like, wow, like that's, you know, whatever, they found me out. She's like, you weren't exactly like hiding it. Like you
right.
worked in a cubicle and you were constantly like obviously blogging for a website. And I was like, oh, yeah. That makes sense. But they, you know, I sat me down with like my boss and then her boss and then her boss's boss. And they're like, okay, we have to quit this other job. And, you know, and I remember going home that night and like not sleeping and then coming the next day and be like, I'm going to quit this job.
Right, right.
And because I'm like, oh, this is the thing I don't want to do.
Right.
And
well, now, was there stuff that was going like very much undone, or was it the kind of job, and I say this as somebody I think who had the latter of what I'm about to say, like a job where quite honestly there wasn't that much to do? So I mean, I guess if you're a really, really, really honest person, you would say to someone like, you haven't given me enough to do. But I feel
yes.
like that's probably not what you're doing when you're 20 years old. Like, it's kind of unlikely. And you're probably going to go, hey, as long as I get done whatever they expect me to get done, then I'm going to blog the rest of the time. Or was it like, we need to talk to you. There is like, look at that, like gesturing to
right.
a pile of stuff that was just piling up, or what?
Well, you know, so I was working as an office assistant in this office, and part of my duties were like updating the website. It was the career development office, you know, so it was like maintaining their website.
Ironic, you were developing your career.
Me.
What do they want?
Exactly, that's what I said. No,
yeah.
So basically, I had to like update the website, you know, update like the website where they have like job listings, that kind of stuff. So like stuff that was like, you know, maintaining things online and then answering
yeah.
emails, like student emails, that kind of stuff. But then I was there a couple of years, and the longer I was there, like the more I was sort of being made to work as like the assistant to the, I don't even know what you call it, but like finance companies would come and do like interviews, you know? So sort of I was doing more like the professional interviewing process that they set up through the office, which I am terrible at. So,
uh-huh.
and I would constantly like screw up dates and like all this different stuff, and I would constantly be yelled at. But my argument was always like, well, I wasn't hired to do this, and I don't know how to do this, and
right,
I don't have the
right.
skill set, and no one is explaining it to me. So I really think realistically, it was, you know, a blessing in disguise, because I think I just was bad at that job,
yeah,
and because it is not the job I was hired for, and I would have failed at it regardless. That being said, was I also doing another job? Absolutely I was.
Right.
So
right.
they weren't wrong. I think it was like, oh, you're sort of just this ambiguous, like, oh, it's, you're the office assistant. We can sort of make you do whatever we want you to.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing they wanted me to do was something that I had absolutely no skill for.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I went in the next day and I quit. And and I was like basically able to take out enough hours blogging where like it wasn't full time and I had no money. But because I was young enough, I was like, well, what am I doing anyways?
Yeah.
And and then after that, I was sort of started freelancing, and that was sort of the beginning of being able to write and make enough to like live off of it.
That's a good story. It really is impressive that it was the career development office that all of this was happening in. That's just gorgeous. Feels very poetic.
You know, there's definitely like, questions people ask me where it's like, man, I don't know how you become a writer. It's like, I wish I knew.
Totally.
I wish I could help you.
I still do that. I feel like I'm such a bad advice giver about stuff because I don't. I mean, it's sort of good and bad, right? Is I'm very much the person who did not have a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan, a 20-year, like I've had, didn't have a 1-year plan. When someone has a specific ambition, I have a hard time pinning down like a thing to say. I will say that improv has been so helpful in so many ways, not the least of which is that is a thing I feel comfortable recommending almost all the time, no matter what someone is interested in, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it really is like a great catch-all for confidence building, like all the stuff that you sort of roll your eyes at when you think about like the corporate version of improv. But it's true. I mean, that those things are true and they're very effective and it never feels like I don't think I've ever known anyone who truly like had a great teacher, even if they just took one class and said like, well, that was a waste of time.
Right.
You know, so that has been a good recommendation. But yeah, it's really hard to, especially with more ephemeral stuff. I mean, it's hard like, when you know there are a set of steps that make more sense to becoming a CPA, there just are,
right?
And if you're so close-minded in exactly what your path needs to be with something creative or entertainment related, whatever, that's like also a huge risk to be so to be so, you know, because I feel like so much of what's happened for me has been because I was open to whatever was sort of coming my way, you know?
Yeah. And I think especially like giving advice to younger people, where it's like the stuff I did, I don't know it, like, you know, I had a Tumblr that nobody uses that anymore, or like, right. You know, now everyone has a podcast. I do too. And it's sort of like the advice that I would give someone who's younger, it's like, I don't know, because the things that I did to get started, I don't think people do them anymore, or like not in the way that they were 10 years ago, you know? So yeah. I think that's another hard thing where it's like, there are probably a lot of great stuff you should be doing. I wish I knew what they were.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that was the thing about doing improv, is like meeting people who were all sort of like, not all young, but like all like young in the sense of like where they were at in their career. So it was meeting people that were also like, if somebody discovered something, they would tell you, you know, like, right, oh, I found this website, or like someone told me to go here and it worked or whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, I think that's another reason that improv was great. And you know, and eventually I started doing stand up, and I was part of a sketch team for a while. And so much of that was having peer support and friends, you know. And then,
well, it goes back to what you were saying about high school. It's like, I mean, I couldn't be less surprised that somebody who liked being around people and cooperating and like being in a team spirit, you know, that kind of environment, like improv is a golden place to land, you know.
Yeah. And I feel like only in the last couple of years, like, I really been able to like sit down. Like last year I wrote my first feature. And so it's like, and a lot of that is like, I just don't like being alone. I just don't like sitting for hours and days and weeks
Girl,
by myself.
I hear ya. I hear ya. Yes.
And it's only now in my golden years that I've been able to have that. Because I feel like when I was in like my early 20s, like I could not sit down to write anything to save my life. And a lot of that was just, I just want to be out. And like, I just want to be around people. And I don't want to like be sitting in my sad room with like my one light bulb working on my opus. And I wish I had been that person when I was younger, because like I feel like, oh, I'd feel like I would more further along my ability to write a movie, for example. But yeah, I just a very extroverted person, and I guess I thank God that the quarantine had happened now versus when I was 24 25. I feel so bad for those kids. Like,
I know.
It's like those years where you're like, my only thing is going out and hanging with my friend.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hey friends, Jesse here, the founder of Maximum Fun, and I have some really great news to share with you. This year has brought a lot of changes for all of us. And one tradition that we were grateful to be able to hold on to is our annual pin sale to benefit charity. This year, through your generosity and love of pins, you helped raise $95,400 for Give Directly. If you're a member and you bought pins, they'll ship in January. In the meantime, your support will provide direct cash relief to families impacted by COVID-19 across the United States. Even in this incredibly tough year, the Max Fun community remains extraordinarily kind. And whether or not you bought pins, you can continue to help by heading to givedirectly.org. And as always, thank you.
I play a game of MASH at the end of episode. But I will provide the categories. You are familiar with MASH or no?
Yes, it is.
Mansion, the, apartment, shack, house?
Absolutely, yes.
There we go.
Great.
Okay, so let's do some categories that I hope you will find enjoyable. Let us start with three groups of people. I guess I kind of want to lean into the idea of it being a TV group, like a TV family or a TV TV family, not in the necessarily the blood related sense, but like Cheers or like Friends. It could be, but like three groups that you, as a people person who loves being around people, will be able to sort of like hang out with those groups as you feel them in your heart, from three TV shows. Doesn't matter what era, current day, old timey, whatever you want.
Okay, the first one that comes to mind is of course Friends. Yeah. But you know, people could say what they will, but realistically, I hang out with them. And let's see. I would say Veronica Mars, because I was recently rewatching that.
Nice.
And while I do feel like it would probably end in my murder, I do like all those characters, so I would hang out with them.
Nice.
And then I'm gonna say, Superstore. The cast of Superstore, which I've been watching right now, and is really funny.
Nice. Shout out to my friend Colton. Okay, great.
Oh, he's great.
He's so good. He's one of my favorite, all-time favorite improvisers. I do a podcast called Voyage to the Stars with him, and I just like the dynamics that he brings to improv are so fucking superb. Next category. I don't know why I made that about me. I apologize. Superstore's great.
Love it.
Next category. Let's do three places in the world, whether you've been there or not, that it would be fun to have a second home, and we'll pretend like I can just, you know, teleport you there and COVID's not a thing.
I'm gonna say, I wanna the lakes region of England, which I've never been, but Taylor Swift had a song about them this year and it made me look it up and fantasize about going there one day.
Yes, indeed. Okay.
And then I'm going to say Ohio, like Lake Erie, a nice lake cabin. That would
wonderful.
Be nice. And then I'm going to say Palm Springs, because I just went there. Well, not just, but I have been there one time and it was really lovely.
Perfect. Okay. Next category. This is MASH. So we have to have some romantic interests. All due respect to Dave.
He'll understand. Oh,
good. Okay. So any character, any era, and, you know, actor, character from a movie, from a book, from a cartoon. I mean, the sky's the limit. Whatever you want.
Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to say one of my first celebrity crushes was Joaquin Phoenix in the movie Signs.
Oh, great.
Where he does have to hit a alien, or he tries to hit an alien with a baseball bat.
Yeah. Yep.
Gosh.
Because his dying mother told him to, if memory serves.
Yes, to swing away.
Great.
Yes.
Great.
I'm going to revisit that because I feel like that's going to be a movie where the further out from it, the even less sense it's going to make.
Let's see.
I'm going to say, your friend Colton from Superstore, because I love him and I'm excited for him to, I'm assuming they're going to get him back with Dina at some point this season.
Mm-hmm.
I hope. And gosh, who else? What other celebrity? Oh, and then I'm going to say Jesse Plemons, because I just watched Date Night, and he's great in that movie.
Jesse Plemons, wonderful. Did you ever watch Friday Night Lights?
No, I never did. I know him from like everything else, but I never watched that.
Yeah, I did not watch it when it was on. I don't know that I made it through the whole thing, not because I didn't like it. I think it was a situation where like maybe at the time you could only watch the first like two seasons or something. But I just, speaking of, you know, like the sort of quintessential college football experience. Okay, next category, let's do three. It's always fun when someone has, and I certainly will talk about your podcast at the end. In fact, while I am calculating your MASH results, I want you to tell everybody about it and where they can find it and other things you've got going on, if you've got stuff you want people to know about. That being said, without having tipped our hand too much leading up to this point, three horror movies that you have to exist inside of for some period of time.
Oh my God. Okay.
But somehow, whatever the like villain or, you know, paranormal, whatever that is, you have like you can mirror its abilities. So you'll be safe. Oh, okay. And in fact, you may end up saving everyone.
Okay.
So it's like a double thing. Like you're going in and you have to deal with it. But you also are like Rogue and X-Men. You can like absorb their powers and then use them against them if you want to. Three.
Okay, great. I love this. I'm going to go with, first of all, Candyman, because Tony Todd is a legend. And it would be nice to just sort of, we did an episode of Ruined about Candyman, and my co-host Allison suggests it would be nice, basically you'd be able to just appear in a mirror anywhere in the world. So it's like if you want to go to Paris, you just appear in a bathroom mirror there, you step out, you're in Paris.
So that would be a great power. I was so afraid you were going to say you want bees to be able to come out of your mouth.
I have always thought if my mouth was full of bees, how happy would I be? Yeah, that would also be nice. Not that I want bees in my mouth, but if I had to have them there, they wouldn't hurt. I like that.
Good point. Good point. That's a very good point. Okay, great. So Candyman's the first one.
And I guess I would say Freddy Krueger, even though he is gross. Yeah, but I feel like
you don't have to look like him.
You
don't have to look like him, and you don't have to make raunchy sex puns either.
Oh my God! Yeah, we just rewatched the first one. What a diva from the jump. He's just sassy.
Yeah, the third one was Dream Warriors.
Yeah,
because that truly is like a weirdly important movie for me. Like it feels weirdly important. This idea that, you know, that you're the demons in your dreams, if you can sort of make yourself into a superhero on some level, that you would be able to fight those. I mean, granted, everyone died except for one person, but anyway. Okay.
but you get it.
And okay, then, Freddy Krueger, great.
Boy, and then I'm trying to think of, I guess the Babadook.
Sure.
Because I do like his look. Again, I don't have to dress like him. But, if I leave a book somewhere and somebody reads it, and then I'm just allowed to come into their house whenever I want. That sounds
That's
fun.
Great. It's great. I love how much it's been interpreted into like being able to travel and being able to like snoop on other people's houses. That is, both of those things are key to me as well. So I strongly approve. Okay. Next category, three foods. It could be as specific or as general as you want, that in this alternate universe we're creating, there are zero ramifications. So it's not too sugary. It's not something you're allergic to. Okay. It's not something that's bad for the environment, etc. And you can have it in perpetuity at the snap of your fingers. Three.
I'm going to say scallion pancakes, because I just figured out, we've been eating vegan and those are vegan, and I just figured that out. And so I've made them twice and they're so good, but they're saturated with oil. So you can only make them so much, but they're so good and easy to make at home.
Love it.
Boy, a catfish sandwich, specifically from the restaurant in LA, All Day Baby, because it's a perfect sandwich. And then, trying to think. I'm going to say like a gnocchi.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. She's a savory, everybody.
Well, yes, all the way.
Yeah. Me too, I think. But God, that never was never true when I was younger.
Same here.
Did that happen? Were you a sweet tooth and then you sort of slowly transformed? Yeah, right?
Yeah, now I love, my thing is like getting different kinds of vinegar, which I never liked as a kid.
Yeah, same.
And I'm a savory snack. All I eat is like nuts now instead of like wanting sugar. I guess, I guess it's just getting older and our bodies being like, please stop. Stop doing this.
It's a call for help, a desperate call for help. Agreed. Okay, next category, let's do three pop culture icons from any era that you get to like spend a day with.
Okay, well, obviously the first one is Dolly Parton.
I love that you said it was obvious as if we've had a conversation about her up to this point.
Well, she's
but at the
just
same
someone,
time,
yes,
couldn't
we
agree
might
more.
As well have. Every
I couldn't agree more.
On some level about Dolly Parton. And I don't know when this comes out, but we all just collectively found out that she helped fund one of the COVID vaccine research, the Moderna vaccine.
Did we need a reason to love her more? No.
Exactly.
Did she give us one? Yes.
She did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to say Dolly. Boy, other than that, Meryl Streep, I'd love to meet her. Love to pick her brain.
Yeah.
And then pop culture. I guess RuPaul. No, RuPaul, they're kind of the whole fracking thing. I'm going to say Trixie Mattel, who is also a Drag Race competitor.
Yes, indeed. Trixie Mattel, fabulous name, goes without saying. Okay, next category, let's do three. I'm really leaning into the ruined theme.
Great.
Three things in life that aren't a horror movie, but that you could sort of turn into a horror movie?
I would say right now we have fruit flies and we're trying to figure out, I think it's the drain, like we have to figure out how to clean inside the drain.
Mm-hmm,
but I feel
mm-hmm.
like constant having fruit flies, I think someone could, that could drive someone.
Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. That's a great start. Yes.
So definitely that. For a hot second, our toilet was having problems. Mm-hmm. So I would say a constantly breaking toilet. I could see how that could really spiral out of control. Yeah. I mean, more of a psychological horror, but definitely you could see how someone could get there.
Oh, you just reminded me of something that I've been in denial about since you distracted me out of it, which is that I think something has died under our deck.
I'm so sorry.
I came out this morning and I was like, uh-oh, because it's happened. I've lived here a long time and it's happened a couple of other times. So I feel like it's kind of like,
you know,
there's no way that I'm wrong. And yeah, it's a feeling of like, oh, what is it going to be? Like one time it was a crow. One time it was a possum.
Oh boy. How'd that crow even know to go down there?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to say something dying under your deck because I remember in my childhood home, there was like a crawl space between like the house and the garage and mice would die there. And my poor father would have to crawl into this crawl space and try to get him out.
Yeah,
but
I'm not
I know
sure.
The smell well.
Yeah, it's role specific. Okay, thank you for taking that accidental suggestion on my part because I agree.
Oh, it's perfect.
It's super creepy. Okay, and then final category for the what do I want to do for you? Let's do three writers of any kind that it would be living or dead that it would be fun to collaborate on something with.
Oh boy. Well, let's see. I would say always a Stephen King. I feel like that was my first intro to horror, as it was for many people.
Yeah.
In the 90s growing up. And I definitely get me in there. And I feel like we'd come up with something great.
Yeah.
I guess Ari Aster, who wrote Hereditary and Midsommar. So nice. I think he's great. And
I couldn't finish Midsommar. It was so disturbing.
You know, I thought Hereditary was so...
Oh, I also haven't seen that at all.
Oh, yeah. That,
because everyone's like, you can't handle it, Janet. You're too fragile.
Yeah, if you, Janet, I mean, you're not fragile. Perhaps you just want to maintain your, you know, your pleasant experience of life and not have to watch the worst thing you've ever seen. Oh, yeah, I would say if you can't get through Midsommar, don't even.
Okay,
why
good.
Torture yourself?
All right, good. I've
and
made
then,
the right choice. Good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I was just reading this book, North American Lake Monsters. It's like a book of short stories. And the author's name is Nathan Ballengrund. So I would like to write something with him.
I am going to attempt to spell his name the way it sounds and just say B-A-L-L-A-N-G-R-A-N-D.
I think it's close. Oh, okay. There's no N. Sorry. Ballingrud? Grud? Ballingrud. You know, hey, everyone Google him. It's a good book so far.
Great, 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 great. So there are that many North American lake monsters that there can be a book of multi-chapters talking about different ones.
Well, I think it's more, it's a book of scary short stories.
I see.
So it's more of a loose, like, Americana. So, like, they all take place in modern America. So they're not all lake monsters, but they're sort of, like, entities of some sort. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I took that super literally.
Okay. That makes sense.
I'm just going to do my little like squiggle thing that, you know, if you play MASH, it's the way by which we arrive at the number that we'll use to eliminate things. So just tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
Okay. I am going to do the tabulation.
Great.
Would you please tell everyone about Ruined and anything else, including like, you know, how to follow you and all that kind of good stuff while I do these results?
Absolutely. Thank you. So I host a podcast called Ruined with my co-host, Allison Leiby, who's also a very funny comedian and writer. The premise of it is essentially I love horror movies. Allison hates them and cannot watch them. She's watched three horror movies over her entire life. And one of them was Get Out, which I think is more of a thriller. So I think she was able to get through that okay. But basically every episode, I watch a new horror movie and then I tell it to Allison in great graphic detail.
Okay.
And she sort of gets to ask questions and react in real time to the telling of the horror movie. And I really want to, I'm telling it to scare her. And at the end, she gets to rate how scared she thinks it was based solely on my telling of the movie. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's a lot of comedy. So if you're expecting to get super spooked, only if you're someone who cannot watch horror movies at all will you be spooked. The rest of you, it's a good time.
Great.
And you could follow us at Ruin Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow me at Hallie Kiefer on Twitter and Instagram. And we've also, we're trying to come up with different ways to sort of like expand. Well, what else can we give the people? So we're going to roll out some videos of us discussing things from the news that perhaps feel like they're from a horror movie.
Oh, sure. Good idea.
And we obviously love to, if you have a movie you'd like us to do, please at me or at the podcast. We would love to do them. We have a whole list. And I plan on doing this until I die, which hopefully is a long time from now. But, you know, if it's not, we're going to keep going. So, but yeah, so please give us a listen.
Great. Yeah, guys, please do. I have some results that I feel you'll be pleased by. I mean, I think I like what I'm seeing here.
I'm very excited.
Let's see. Where do we want to start? First of all, I want to congratulate you on your mansion somewhere near Lake Erie.
Love it.
Kind of wonderful. Feels right since we were just talking about taking literal lake monsters as being that only thing that book could be about. I also want to just acknowledge, I got to tear this Band-Aid off for myself right away, which is that you have granted me the horror movie of The Thing That Died Under My Deck.
Great.
So
I think that, and that's exciting for you because now I hope in your head you're like, well, what could it be?
Oh, for sure. And while I'm actually experiencing it, I wouldn't mind if you and your frequent collaborator, Stephen King, came up with something fabulous in the fiction world to also scare the shit out of me.
Wonderful.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
I also want to say, you know, not bad company, Stephen King. Also, your experience with Meryl Streep, not bad at all.
Dear friend Meryl.
That's right. You and Meryl. Oh, you go back. You also have unlimited scallion pancakes in your world with zero oil-related or other ramifications.
The dream. That's the one I'm most excited about.
Like, I'm so like, glad. Yeah, that was number one big time for you, and you got it. You got it. You are experiencing all of this in this alternate universe with none other than the charming and very talented Jesse Plemons.
Wonderful.
wonderful, wonderful. And
oh yeah, sorry, yeah, I realized this remember he's married to Kirsten Dunst. Sorry, Kirsten.
It's okay. In this alternate universe, none of those things are a set situation.
Great.
And then finally, and very importantly to me, and I thank you, and I want to see this happen, you do have the ability to go into the Nightmare on Elm Street movies and Ooh. Battle Freddy on your terms.
Now. Yeah. That guy is going to really regret all that stuff he did.
That's right. That's right.
Finally.
And those jokes, those tacky jokes.
My jokes are going to be even campier.
Do it. Do it. And that's it. That is your 100% guaranteed MASH game. Hallie, thank you so much.
Thank you this so has much. Been this such a treat. Delight.
What yeah, a beautiful distraction for me. Yeah. And I will have your co-host on at some point as well. So that will be fun. Perhaps I'll throw some of the same questions at her and we'll see how she comes out of it now that she feels that she knows more about horror movies than she ever wanted to. We'll see Fabulous. If we can apply that to her. Cool. Everybody follow and listen and support and all that good stuff. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should. Someplace new.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.